Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. This also goes out on the Lilydale Assembly page as well as my YouTube channel. And if you want the listen-only feature, you can tune in on blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio. This is an opportunity for me and my special guests to have a spiritual conversation regarding spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And I've been doing shows for many years now. This, in fact, is year 7 of Wednesdays with Willa. So there are lots of archived videos that you can look back and enjoy all of the guests, all of the topics that we've covered throughout the years. And I encourage you to type in Willa White Medium and a certain guest name, and you'll be able to find the videos and watch them again if you're on YouTube or on Facebook. And a lot of topics throughout the years regarding mediumship and wonderful guests that have been on the show. So definitely tune in each week, but also know that you have the option of binge watching later. A lot of people tell me they do that. I want to also mention that Lilydale Assembly is taking donations this time of year. So don't forget that you can certainly share the gift with Lilydale, and know that your donation really does help the organization to continue and to be able to support the programming that we do and other events that are so important to the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. So you can find more information about that on the Lilydale Assembly website. And I am really excited to have this special guest on the show today, Randy Kerman. Thanks for being on the show today, Randy.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to join you.
Absolutely. It's always good to connect with you and have a good chat. And today we're going to be focusing on a topic near and dear to your heart, Hanukkah. And we'll be talking about spiritualism and the Festival of Lights. For those of you who don't know who Randy Kerman is, Randy is a spiritualist minister as well as being a board member of the Lilydale Assembly. And he's been raised in the Jewish tradition and really brings a lot to the discussion such as this in terms of merging Judaism and spiritualism and finding those connection points and really sharing with folks, especially with Hanukkah being tomorrow. I thought it would be great to have you on the show and to highlight some of the important aspects of that religion, but also what we can do if we want to just celebrate the light as well in our lives. So I'm really excited to have you share with us today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to discussing with you any of the questions that you have and some enlightenment and hopefully... No pun intended, enlightening.
Every pun intended, right?
Every pun intended.
With
know
that.
Me well.
Yes, exactly.
We should state that we're sort of neighbors in Lilydale.
We are. We're on the same street.
We live full-time, but we live part-time there.
Just down the street, and it's lovely to know that your new wife are part of spiritualism and doing what you can to support that as well. We really appreciate that. And I know in terms of Judaism and being raised in that tradition, you've had the opportunity to really balance out spiritualism and Judaism within your own life. Everybody has to find that uniquely when they come from a different religious background initially. And I can't wait to have you share those points. But should we go ahead and get started with Hanukkah and what's that about? Because some people may have some understanding. I mean, everybody knows there's a menorah, everybody knows there's the lighting of it, but there is a particular sweetness to this particular this unique tradition. So,
yeah. So
we'll get into that.
First of all, a little bit that you mentioned the menorah. Menorah is like a candelabra. At Hanukkah, there's a special one. It's called a Hanukkiah. And it's a little different because it has the 8 plus the 1 that's raised usually. So there's 9 candles on there. So all Hanukkiahs are menorahs, but not all menorahs are Hanukkiahs. So just to get that sort of difference in there. So let's sort of start with let's start with the tradition, some of the traditions, and then we'll get into the how the holiday came to be the way it is. So traditions are, there's a theme around oil because of the oil. You go back several thousand years ago, there wasn't wax and wicks. Oil was burned in lighting sources. So the sweetness comes in is that we do a lot of things that are fried in oil. So there's a Yiddish term, a Jewish term, basically a donut. That are, you know, deep fried in oil, and yes, you usually fill them with something and something sweet like jam, or mm-hmm. more recently is Nutella and those types of things. So we also make potato pancakes, which are called latkes, and there's a million different ways that people will argue the best way of making latkes, from grated to shredded to with extra ingredients or just the potatoes. We have some family stories about latkes. The correct pronunciation is latkes, not lackeys. We had a daughter come home from school. And the teacher insisted it was lackeys, and my daughter said, And one of the fellow students said, "She's Jewish. I think she knows what she's talking about," meaning my daughter. So there's some little fun stories about that. So why the oil? I'll get to that. When the Romans conquered Jerusalem, they damaged the temple and desecrated the temple. When the Maccabees and the Jews were able to recover and take over the temple again, they went to, in our temples, like a lot of places, we have an eternal light, a light that's on all the time, usually over the Ark of our Torahs, is usually where it is. So there's usually a candelabra or a menorah that's lit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When they went to relight it, so here's where there's a controversy of stories. There wasn't enough oil to last the time to either make new sacred oil or to go travel and come return with the sacred oil. So there's some say that it was the time to go to another place and get the sacred oil, and others say it was a time to purify and make the oil. Either one is irrelevant to which one it was. So the story was that there was enough oil for the light for one day, but the oil miraculously lasted and kept the light going for 8 days until there was more oil. So how the oil got there is irrelevant. It was that it lasted for those 8 days, and hence Hanukkah is a festival and a holiday that we honor for those 8 days. So some of the things that happen in those, so we, on the Hanukkiah, you will find a spot for 8 candles on one level, and there's usually one that's at a higher level, and I'll get to that in just a moment. We start by lighting one candle each the first night, then 2 the second, 3 the, et cetera. So by the 8th night, you have all 8 candles lit.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the 9th one? The 9th one is called the Shema, the Shemesh. It's used for lighting the other candles. So you light that one with a match or a method of lighting it, and then you use that one to light the candles rather than a match or something for each one. A kosher Hanukkiah, because you'll find ones that aren't on the same level, but to be a proper one, they should all be at the same level, except for the one that you use for lighting, because it has a higher calling for lighting the candle.
Yeah, I've heard that one in the center that you light the other candles with is called the servant candle. And
yes.
I love that term, that this one is the servant, and yet it's higher.
Yes, because it has a higher function than
yes.
the other one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always in the center. For the traditional type, it is. Sometimes it's on the end, one end or the other. So it's, and then there's arguments of whether you start from left to, lighting from left to right. No, do you start the candles in at the left, going to left to right, or do you go right to left? Because in Judaism, the reading is from right to left, the opposite to the most of the rest of the world. Not all the world, because Chinese go up and down. Japanese.
Yeah.
So there's argument whether you put the candles in, like starting with 1, 2, 3, do you start from left to right, and then do you light them from right to left or left to right? And
who's left and who's right? Who's, is it?
Well, you go to one rabbi, you'll get one story answer, you go to another, you get another. There's an old saying that if there's two Jews in a room having an argument, there's four opinions. Because they could never come to a common thing. And you'll actually, you've seen that sort of brought out in different movies sometimes, the idea of the different opinions of things. We just rewatched the movie World War Z, when he goes to Jerusalem, he asks him, why did you know about this? And he talks about the tenth man, and he talks about how if nine all agree on something, then the tenth man has to take the opposite view and try to prove them wrong. And it actually brings up a very good point that sort of will tie the spiritualism and Judaism together. Judaism is a religion of challenge and debate and questioning, unlike some other monolithic religions where it's do as we say and don't question. Judaism is always up for debate. A lot of our text, ancient texts in that are opinions of rabbis in the conference, the differencing of opinions. So that's why there's no set defined, was the miracle for this or for this? Do you light the candles this way or this way? And you'll find that in a lot of our holidays and a lot of our traditions, there's debates of which way that things are. And it leads you to challenge the norm and challenge the expectation. And I think that in my growing up, I've seen things like, what is tradition and what is, what is law or what is expectation, et cetera.
Yeah.
The best story I've ever heard that goes with that, stories. It's Shabbat dinner. Mom's getting ready to make Shabbat dinner, the Sabbath dinner on the Friday night, and her little daughter's watching her, and she cuts a little bit of the end off of each end of the roast before she puts it in the pan. And the girl asks her mother, why do you do that? She goes, I've done it all my life. Why don't you go ask your grandmother? So she goes and asks her grandmother, and her grandmother says, oh, I've done it all my life. Your great-grandmother's in the other room. Why don't you go ask her why we do it? So she goes to her great-grandmother, and and he goes to her great-grandmother, and her great-grandmother says, why do we always cut the little bit off the end of the roast? And the great-grandmother says, I don't know why everybody else does it, but I did it because the roast was always too big for the pan. So
there you go.
What is tradition and what is law and things that we have to do? And I should stress for people who may not know as much about Judaism, there's three main streams of Judaism. There is the Orthodox, which are the, and even within them there's different levels. There's the ultra-Orthodox, who, you know, for the people, one of those are people that wear the black hats and have the curly hair and the long beards, and traditionally wear black. Then there's the conservative, which is sort of like a middle ground. And then there's reform. Reform, even around the world in different places, has different levels within it. But reform would be the most forward-thinking, I would say, or the more you take of Judaism what you choose to accept. Versus Orthodox is there's no debating it. This is what the Rebbe says. This is what the book says. This is what you do. And so I quite often get asked, how did the differences occur? Well, Judaism, and something that Catholicism didn't take from Judaism has always had a method to change things. So even though it was came down from supposedly from a superior being, from God, the God of your choice, that there was rules and things to follow, there was a mechanism built into it that said sometimes when you're in a different country, when you're in a different place, you have to adhere to, you have to change, sometimes you have to change things. So somewhere around 300 to 400 years ago, a group of Jews said, or a group of rabbis, Jewish rabbis said, no more change. We're leaving things the way they are. No more future change. So hence you have your, our, what are now our ultra-Orthodox, who have, in the secular world now, they tend to live together and work together because they want to adhere and keep the way they are. They are not, they and the rest of Jews are not out to get other people to convert to Judaism. They just want to be left, not necessarily left alone, because they do interact with the secular world. So there's those three areas of Judaism. I was raised on the Reform, but when I got married and started my own family, I joined a synagogue that was probably very leaning towards the conservative end of things, but still a little more liberal. So that's why I don't wear a head covering all the time. That's why I get to choose. And I sort of explain this. If there was a list of 100 things that make you Jewish, Reform gets to say, you pick and choose which of those you wish to. Because, I was just discussing this with someone this week. They talk about the Ten Commandments, but Jews were actually given 613 what they call mitzvot, or commandments.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are things to do, and some of them are things not to do. But the Ten Commandments that people refer to probably would be the top ten, if you make mm-hmm. a top ten list, which has become very popular. So in all of those commandments, none are listed as more important than others. So I don't struggle with, if I choose to drive on the Sabbath, is that more of a sin than eating pork, or less of a sin? Just as an example, and pork is a well-known one, but there's a lot of dietary laws besides pork. And it wasn't because it was unhealthy or unclean. It's because we were told not to eat it,
mm-hmm.
Along with shellfish and a whole long list of things. And it just happens to be that a lot of the things we were told turned out to be very good health-wise not to do. So maybe there was a divine intervention of some sort.
A channeling of nutrition information.
So Hanukkah is 8 days. It's a festival, so it's not a sad holiday. It's a festival. We play games. There's actually, people may know of a dreidel, which is a four-sided spinning top toy, which has letters on it that talks about whether it's, you take none. It's a gambling game, technically.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting when we talk to people about gambling and whatever. It was, oh, you can't gamble, whatever. And I said, well, Hanukkah talks, it's all about gambling.
Yeah.
That's why there's the chocolate coins that people have. It's referred to as gelt. Is that the Yiddish term or the it's Hanukkah gelt? I'm not sure whether gelt is Yiddish or Hebrew. It's German based, so therefore it's Yiddish. And it is used in that game quite often, that you'll use the money to, you put the money in, you spin, you either take none, you take some, or take all, and then the next person spins. And if you took half and they get to take all, then, so it's sort of like any type of poker game. We put an ante in and you sort of spin the dreidel and see who wins.
And I guess that there's a way that if it lands in a certain way, then you get either half of it or all of it or none of it, right?
Well, because it's a top that has sides, so it's going to have one side that's always going to be up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the letters on the four sides represent taking nothing, taking half, taking mm-hmm. all of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the other one refers to, but so all the letters have numerical value, so that's how it's related.
And just so everybody's wondering, Randy's wife also is kind of in the background. if you're hearing a third voice.
It's not divine.
It's not spirit, guys.
It can be. Shh. So it's also a gift-giving holiday. So my children growing up, traditionally I try to do where they got a gift every night. So that rather than one main gift, and sometimes some years it was that there was a main gift, but quite often it was something smaller and it was something every night. And some people may want to know, why is Hanukkah always at a different time of year? The Jewish calendar follows the lunar calendar versus the Gregorian calendar, which is the Roman calendar that is the common base around the world that people use for 12 months, etc. So the Jewish calendar is different. It follows the lunar cycle, so it shifts. It moves slowly each year, and then rather than a leap day once every 4 years that the Gregorian calendar has, the Jewish calendar has a leap month every, I believe, 7 years, so that it then realigns to the lunar cycle, to the seasons, the proper season.
A whole month. That's just amazing to me. A whole month. By the way, we're just going to, add in a month.
Yeah, it kind of works. Well, it works with the lunar cycle, so it's...
So people have reference for 2023, Hanukkah starts tomorrow, December 7th, and that'll run till the December 15th.
Actually, it starts Friday night.
Oh, Friday night.
So I was actually going to bring that up, because a lot of people get confused. Most Gregorian calendars, Christian calendars, have the Jewish holidays on there, and they usually put the day that it starts.
Right.
But the Jewish day starts the evening before.
Evening before.
The nighttime. So that's why our Sabbath starts Friday night to Saturday night.
Right.
Our day is from nightfall to the next nightfall. So although the first day is Saturday, the first candle is lit Friday night.
Got it. So that's how it'll run. So the 8th to the 5th. Yeah, I'm sorry about the date. So the 8th to the 15th. And then with this, with the lighting and the gifts and... I actually had an experience when I was younger. My parents took us to a home where they happened to be Jewish. They happened to be celebrating Hanukkah that night. And so it was really beautiful. They were lighting the menorah, and then the child, he got a gift to open, and they were all excited about it. And it seems like it's such a beautiful family holiday, but it's that sense of, here it is, it's sundown, right? So there's that idea of the darkness coming on. But here we light the candle, and during that time, it's my understanding that you don't do anything else but, be in that space of prayer and joy and the miracle of that, and that you don't use the light of the menorah for let's say, doing work. Or like there's a sacredness to the light that is being experienced. Would that be correct?
That's correct. It goes in line with the candles that we light at the beginning of the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
They're never extinguished. You don't put them out. They have to burn out. I'll bring up this. Being that it's 8 days long, the Orthodox will not do any work in the first 2 days or the last 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the days where the succession of work should not happen.
Mm-hmm.
So goes in line with you don't use the candle for work.
Mm-hmm.
It has a purpose,
right.
And only one purpose. You don't light other candles from it. You don't like a lot of things. There's always exceptions. It's like you're not an Orthodox Jew is not supposed to work on the weekends. You're not supposed to travel, take vehicles, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, we spent a whole show just on that. But in a medical emergency, that all goes out the window.
Right.
The protection of life goes out the window.
Right.
So if that Orthodox Jew was a surgeon, and there was they came to him personally and said, there's this person, and it doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or not, there's a patient, you have to save their life, they need the surgery right now, they're obligated to go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, I also want to bring up why the family invited you during Hanukkah. There isn't, I can't think of a Jewish holiday or celebration where inviting the stranger or the non-Jew isn't encouraged.
Right.
It is always encouraged.
Right.
Quite often people are for Passover, which is in April usually. The memorizing, remembering the Exodus of Egypt. It is actually, it's a mitzvot. It's a blessing to bring in a stranger and invite a person to your table,
yeah,
whether they be Jewish or not.
There's a lovely story of the uninvited guest.
Yes.
That's part of Judaism and part of that understanding of you give what you have during those times.
And it's interesting, not everybody really fully gets this. A lot of our prayers and a lot of our very sacred holidays and our Torah and our mitzvot all have rules about how to, that the stranger among you, the whatever phrase you want to use, the non-Jewish person,
mm-hmm,
and your workers, your slaves, or whatever, all are equal, and they have a position. They are equal in front of the Jewish courts.
Mm-hmm.
They are equal. They were equal in all ways. And there's actually in some of those 613 commandments I talked about. It talks about, you know, back then it was you had to pay your servant at the day that they worked. You don't withhold their wages.
Right.
It was every day you paid them. And so there was, a lot of what is considered common law or our laws and things have all derived from the Jewish text and laws, the Jewish laws, and they have formed our Western society and a lot of societies around the world, not all, but many. And I find it very interesting that when you dive in and read these things, you go, wow, some of it is just common sense, but it's what was the direction. But I wanted to focus on how the stranger amongst you, the whatever is, it's like the farmer, because it was where they were agricultural society, you weren't supposed to harvest the corner of your fields so the people who were less, who didn't have money, the poor, could have some of your crop.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, so it's those types of things are all built into it. So you take care of the poor, you give tzedakah, which is the charity. And when you give to charity, it's actually better if you do it anonymously. You're not supposed to take the credit for it. You're supposed to just give it for the sake of giving because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's, now, does everybody follow that? No, but it's something that both my wife and I try to do, and we've also tried to instill in our children to do.
Mm-hmm. To be of that generous spirit. And so just to make this accessible to people who don't necessarily come from the tradition of Judaism and that understanding, if they wanted to light a candle for Hanukkah, would that be appropriate for them to do?
I don't think, there's nothing Jewish text that says they can't.
It's not written down, no.
usually you get the debates in. I'm sure you'll find Orthodox rabbis that say, no, that's blasphemy, they're whatever. I take the position that it's no different than me going to a Christmas function to help celebrate with my Christian friends and honor their religion and their choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think if someone wants to do something to honor my religion, I'm all for it. And if you're doing something to honor Buddhism, if you're doing something to honor Christianity, you're doing something to honor any religion, if it's coming from the heart, then of peace and of understanding, it brings me to a thought that I raised my children on using the word acceptance, not tolerance.
Mm.
And I hear people use to say, well, you know, that's okay, you know, use tolerance. And I don't like the word tolerance because tolerance means to put up with.
Uh-huh.
I like the word acceptance. Acceptance means we may be different, but I accept who you are and what you stand for, and just I accept it. We may be different. We may have a different opinion, but I accept you for who you are and your opinion, or whether it be religious, whether it be political view, whether it be whatever.
There's a different energy and tension with those two words. They're very distinctly different. Tolerate means, like,
yeah. Well, I use the phrase progress.
You know, like, okay, it's an irritation. The irritation is very there during toleration. But acceptance means, yes, I can be in your presence, accept your viewpoint, accept who you are, and be in that space of the divine. I see the divine in you.
Yes.
In these
it's
moments.
Like the namaste. Mm-hmm. May the God be with me.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I guess you sort of wanted to touch on it, and maybe we'll do it even more later, but you can see how, for those who follow spiritualism, how this can integrate very, very well. I've had for years, I've been meaning to do, I've had friends say, why don't you post on Facebook? And I say, well, we'll take multiple posts of how spiritualism fits with your Judaism.
Yes.
And I've been asked that for years, well, ever since we started coming to Lilydale in 2012, and we didn't really get involved until 2013 and 14. And someone's biting their tongue across the table from me. Because it's all her fault, though.
Of course.
And we can discuss it later, if you'd like, of how I really feel it really dovetails together. It has its quirks sometimes.
Yes. Well, I think it'll be an interesting part of this. And if there's anything else about the Hanukkah tradition that you think would be important for people to know before we dive into that other aspect...
No, I think it's, the only thing that comes to mind is, you know, you see these posts on Facebook, yeah, I'm on Facebook a lot, that says, why Happy Holidays versus Merry Christmas? And, because I grew up in the secular community, I wasn't in the Jewish community growing up. I did go to Sunday school, my parents drove me across town, I was generally the only Jewish kid in school most of the time, and then if I was lucky, there was a teacher or two. Where was I?
Happy Holidays.
Happy Holidays. You see that post that says there's something like 30-some-odd holidays between the 1st of December and the middle of January, mm-hmm. between all the different religions and organizations in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're saying Happy Holidays, it's not diminishing Christmas. It's about being inclusive. So if you're not sure, Happy Holidays is a little bit better. How do I feel when someone wishes me Merry Christmas? I don't take offense to it. They assume, and I just take it. There are people who, there's so many things you could be offended in our life. That's not one of them I'm going to get offended on. Because what was the person's intent?
Joyous sharing. Yeah.
It was sharing about the holiday.
Hey,
the
happy.
Happy times, and you know, may this time of the season be happy for you.
Yes.
Is what we were saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's because in the secular world, Merry Christmas has been the mainstay for years. And I'm okay, it doesn't bother me, because that was the intent. Now, if they know I'm Jewish, and they purposely say it because they want to push the Christmas part of it, the Christ part of it, onto me, then I would, and I think on one hand I could count the number of times that I have felt that way when someone has said that in my 60-plus years of
right.
it.
So it's true rarity, yeah.
I don't take offense by what the odd person does. I will take offense by what the majority does. And it's the majority is the intention of goodwill and
yeah.
peace.
Goodwill to men. Kind of thing.
All the things that Christmas stands for,
yeah.
In that manner, I fully agree with. So.
Beautiful. So, and just to lean in briefly about the Festival of Lights, because that there's that sense of the light coming to Earth and the light within us at the same time. And the light that comes to the earth is a seasonal change that's happening. All through December, more and more light is coming into our world and in our consciousness, even though it's a dark time. I mean, it gets dark by 5 o'clock now. And I'm just like, oh, where is the sun? But it's the season that we do relate with Hanukkah, is that joyous time. That's not just Christmas tree. It's a joyous time of light. And even the Niagara Falls, they get lit up for the Festival of Lights. They put all these little colored lights on things and make it fun.
Yeah. So, interesting that you... Judaism refers to the soul as the spark of light that God puts into the baby at the time of birth.
Yes.
Judaism believes that occurs at the time of birth when that first breath is taken. So that's a whole other subject we don't want to dive into. It's a political nightmare right now, especially in the U.S.
Yep.
So it's interesting that you use the term light, and when I've taken courses by rabbis, some Orthodox rabbis, they refer to that spark of light
mm-hmm.
that God puts into the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we have the Festival of Lights, and I believe there's a couple other religions that refer to this time of year as the Festival
yes.
of Lights as well,
mm-hmm.
Some of the Hindu ones and whatever. So it's interesting how Christmas has Christmas lights and all the lighting, and Judaism has the lights, and how it's all this time of year,
light.
I think, because it's also the darkest time of year for the Northern Hemisphere, at least.
Yes.
So it's just an interesting little tie to that, and then how that spark of light, spiritualism considers that the light energy, that the mediumship that we get is this light that we quite often see, and how
that light and love
focused in on death and near death experiences being, you know, either go to the light or don't go to the light, depending on the movie.
That's right. It's
you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg type of thing. You know, do the movies do that because of I'll generalize a little. A lot of the older movies that did that, Hollywood is very Jewish based, and a lot of it's funny. A little bit of political, the boycott, divest. Most of the major traditional Christian songs are all written by Jewish people. Interestingly enough, so it's
I've read about that too. It's hilarious.
Which goes to show that it's about bringing the light and joy to everyone, not just to ourselves.
I wanted to share with folks, as I mentioned to you, I have this book, The Family Treasury of Jewish Holidays, by Malka Drucker. And when I said I have this book, you said, you have it too. And would you say that's a pretty good reference for people who want to know more about Jewish holidays as a whole, not just Hanukkah?
Yeah, and I believe, if I remember correctly, because I haven't looked at that lately, it's written at the level that can be, you can read to children,
mm-hmm.
but also, like a lot of movies, they're geared to children, but there's a lot of adult stuff in there.
Yeah.
So there's several books like that with the idea that it's to educate.
Yes, and I wanted to share with you what you thought, because it says that the first blessing over the Hanukkah candles, if I could just read this sentence to you, because I think it's really... to me, as a spiritualist, when I read this, I resonate with it so strongly. You abound in blessings, source of light, our God, ruler of all worlds, who has made us holy with your commandments and has commanded us to kindle the light of Hanukkah. So there's that physical light of Hanukkah, but there is that spiritual light of Hanukkah that is so beautiful. And then they say the second blessing gives thanks for the miracles. You abound in blessings, source of all, our God, ruler of the universe. So keeping that titling at the beginning, who performed miracles for our ancestors in those days at this time. And there seems to be that acceptance that there'll be more miracles. Because you've done it before, we know you could do it again. And that seems to be part of the Hanukkah tradition as well, that the miracles continue.
Yeah, that first part of the prayer that you talked about that you love is actually the first part of all of our prayers.
Ah, see, there we go.
So, you know, it's the Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. That's that part.
Yep.
That's the Hebrew.
So yeah, they have it right there. Yep, you said it just right.
I should.
You should.
No book, no notes. It's part of every prayer.
Yes.
So you can see how you don't have to put a lot of dots between that in spiritualism.
Yes.
Okay. There's a few conflicts in spiritualism, which some people struggle with, but I don't have an issue with them. And again, it would be the Orthodox Jews that would have a major issue with them.
Sure.
The conservatives, maybe, and the Reform, don't care.
But there's a different blessing that you do, let's say, for Shabbat, the Sabbath, versus the blessings you would do during Hanukkah time. And would you say there's a building of the energy? Each night there's a building of the energy of remembrance, but also that connection to the divine during those times?
I don't think it's structured to, but it does.
Okay.
You can't help but see when all nine candles, eight candles plus the extra one, are all lit and providing that light. Now, people don't know, I'm in a second marriage as a blended family, so when we had all five of our children, my three children and my wife's three children, they're all my children, when they were together, we had a Hanukkah for everyone. Tamarishka and I had our own, but we had one for each of the kids, so if they would learn the practice, they had one, so when they went out on their own, they had one. But they could light it.
Yes.
And there's also limited to fight who got the light candle.
Well, they say that you usually want each night one a different member of the family gets to light it.
That's a traditional thing, not a law.
But for practical purposes, you were like, everybody gets their own.
So you can imagine we had this island with we had 600 kias out, and on the eighth night, all of them had like nine candles burning, and the rest of the lights were out in the house. It really, the energy that came from that.
Yeah.
Yes, it did build because it just was. Now the kids weren't all there for all something. As they get a little older, they weren't there for the whole thing.
Sure.
But when they were, it was. So to answer your question, I felt the energy build.
Yes. Yeah.
And
the magnification of it. Yeah. Beautiful.
There's this building towards getting all of them lit.
Mm-hmm. And then also knowing that symbolically, even if you feel like you're on the last drop of oil, the last drop of something of energy that you have within yourself, that you can sustain beyond that moment. That's what I take from it too, that you sustain beyond just that moment, that you may even be able to extend another 8 days or years, or whatever time frame it is that you need to get through a circumstance, too. So there's a hardiness to that that I appreciate, and that digging deep for the spirit and a remembrance to take that into other times at different points of the year, not just during Hanukkah.
It's funny. My business life, I like to use analogies and stories to go with it, and it's about endurance and things that you talked about. I've seen it a month before, but a study where they put mice into water.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one, too.
And just before they gave up and drowned, they picked the mice up, took them out, let them recover.
Yes.
Like for an hour, then they put them right back into it again.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than, and they only lasted like 15 minutes the first time.
Yeah.
And they did days afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why were they able to push, and the study showed that because they knew that they would be rescued, their body was able to go beyond the normal endurance because they knew that they were going to be rescued.
Yes.
And
there's a psychology to that.
It ties into just what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Why does the mother have, when the child's in danger, the ability to pick up a car, lift up the end of a car type of thing? That adrenaline flow, that thing that... And there's no answer for it other than because, right?
Right.
And that's what all, I think, religion requires is that bit of that leap of faith.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, that's where that leap of faith becomes with belief.
So what are some other connections that you feel Judaism and spiritualism have with each other?
Well, I think it goes to how can you be Jewish and believe in spiritualism? Well,
there you go.
If you go down the principles of spiritualism,
mm-hmm.
they tie to the Ten Commandments. They tie to those other 600 and change, 601. The one I like the most, or the two that I like the most is actions create results according to natural law. In other words, we're and actions, the one right after that one, sorry, my mind's gone blank, but that primary one is the one that I like, that our actions, to me that means we're accountable for our actions, and because we're accountable for our own actions, whatever occurs from them is natural. So that's what spiritualism believes, but so does Judaism. Judaism believes in responsibilities, because you know, it talks about honoring parents and all those are all responsibilities.
Yeah.
And it lists out all these things that we should do or shouldn't do because there's consequences. Now, the Orthodox would say it's consequences because of how God's going to feel. I think there's consequences in our life that happen. And so nothing, because there's no dogma with spiritualism that says you shall not, you shall or shall not do these things, it's not telling me to do anything different than what my Judaism does. So I guess the only real conflict comes in the connection to the spirit world. And I have an argument. Go figure, Julie has the argument for something. And I can, I've always said my whole life, you want to have a debate, tell me which side you want. I can always argue either side of anything. So some of those commandments talk about not talking with spirits. And depending on whose interpretation you read, some say you shouldn't ever, and others say you can if it's for good. But I just look back at the Bible, which is a book written by man, supposedly divinely inspired, or, you know, that's a whole argument on its own. But let's look at some of the stories in there. I like going to Joseph and his amazing Technicolor dream coat. He interpreted dreams.
That's right.
Is that not a form of spiritualism? Yes, it is. You know, there, in the ancient times, no country ever went to war without a soothsayer telling them what to do and what not to do. Now, some people will say that's into the Wicca world and the paganism, but the reality is, no, spiritualism and mediumship is not fortune telling. And mediumship tells you possibilities. And I look at what some of those soothsayers and things told them for war. They weren't always accurate, right? Usually got them killed, but they weren't always accurate because they told of possibilities. And most kings and generals that went to them wanted to know possibilities so that they were prepared in the battlefield. So it's interesting how history has always had these. Christianity has them. Judaism has it in the Kabbalah, which supposedly only certain high priests are allowed to be educated and learn and do, but that's been blown out of the water by Reform Judaism and the rest of the world, and so Kabbalah is the mystics, right? So, like, it's there, it's part of the religion. So, I think some of the belief of it in my mind is, and this can be said of multiple religions, do as I say, not as I do. And anytime someone tells me to do as I say, not as I do, I don't really want to listen. So, and I've seen in our years being involved in Lilydale and spiritualism and mediumship around, I guess, Canada, United States. We've been in Israel and done it. My wife's been in the UK and done it. I've seen so much good come of it. And people who... I've always been a skeptic, and there's a very good medium in Lilydale who once told me, we love the skeptics because the skeptics keep us on our toes and they keep us honest.
Well, there's a difference between a healthy skeptic and someone who's just a,
Well, I've done a lecture once on skeptics versus non-believers.
Yeah.
Skepticism, it was on. And it's the non-believers that are the problem. Those are the people that no matter how much truth is put in front of them,
right.
they will never change their mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they just tolerate us, to go back to our other term. So I've seen mediums, and I've watched mediums work and give message and details to people that there's no way they ever could have known other than connecting with someone from the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when that's happened and verified by the person who's been receiving the message, how can you not believe?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was beginning, I've had those deja vu moments in my life. I've had things where totally unexplainable, where I've known something that was I should never have known. So I've formed my own opinions on how that interrelates with reincarnation
mm-hmm.
and all the different things that people want to throw. They ask me my opinion of, and I give it. I give what I think is a logical potential explanation based on my beliefs and my understanding of that spark of light
mm-hmm.
that Junius and believes that spark of light is put into the child. And then at death, it goes back.
And where does it go after death?
Well, there's no explanation. It goes to the ether, right? It goes back to God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what's not discussed in Judaism is whether that spark is put back into another person or not. So people who believe in reincarnation believe that goes back into another soul at a later time. I don't know. It's possible. But I think that if Einstein's spark is there in the spirit world and never comes back, what if someone's baby's spark is befriended by him and spends time with him and is therefore more intelligent when it comes to this world? So that's why you can pull someone out of the African jungle who's a math genius.
Mm-hmm.
He's never had a day of school.
Mm-hmm.
How Beethoven can write his first symphony at age 4.
Yes.
You know, how those things happen.
Genius savants, yes.
And the savants, everything. So, or how someone can wind up having a singing voice of an opera person at age 7, right, type of thing. And we see on America's Got Talent or whatever. Or, you know, whatever those shows. These kids come up with these voices.
Yes.
And
they're phenomenal.
Talents.
I had a quick question about whether spiritual healing you felt was in place in Judaism and had a place there at all.
Well, it's a good question. It's something I've really never. Well, first of all, the one thing I can do mediumship. Healing is my forte. So, and it's not me. I'm just a conduit.
Right.
Okay. So, in spiritualism, the healing. The hands-on healing that we do is not, we're not doing it, we're just a conduit. Just like the medium isn't the dead person, they're just a conduit from the spirit world to this world. So where does it fit into Judaism? Well, I don't know, what comes to mind is, if they're upset for people with this, Jesus was known as a healer and a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Judaism acknowledges him as a healer and a prophet. The only thing we don't recognize him as the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, if he was a healer and a prophet who was Jewish some 2,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
he was a Jewish person that was a healer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I would say Judaism does have healing in it, and we actually have prayers for healing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called the Mishabera. You can look it up, and it talks. It's the prayer is the one that we sing in our synagogue that I still belong to. It's half in English and half in Hebrew, and it's about giving healing to those who need it.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to what I always bring when I do a healing prayer of any sort, is only for those who need it, but for those who don't know to ask for healing. In my mind, they need it just as much. Because if you know you need healing, you're probably going to find ways to get that healing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people that don't know how to act. And Judaism brings up that don't know how to ask in other holidays as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can read the story of Passover. It talks about the four children.
Yeah.
The one who does not even know how to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's always that circular theme of of healing, of helping, and for those who don't know. So to answer the question short, I believe Judaism does. I just haven't dived into.
It's not something that's talked about in, let's say, the normal Jewish culture. Maybe in, the Kabbalah, that sort of thing. They might touch a bit more about that sort of.
They might. The only healing in Judaism I know of is the prayer for the healing.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to spiritualist churches where you can, there's usually the rabbi who leads the prayer will ask if there's anybody that has a name that they don't want to put on the healing list.
On the healing list. Yeah, everybody has a healing list in church,
in
synagogues, and everything.
So
in temples.
I guess Judaism believes that prayer can provide that healing and thinking of that person healing. So it's not a big leap to believe that Judaism believes that we can mentally send out healing to people.
Mm-hmm.
So is it something that's taught and whatever? No, it isn't. Mm-hmm. But it is part of the religion. And maybe something for me to look into a little deeper.
Yeah, I think it would be fascinating to just get some more of those connections. I know we just have a little time left. Are there any other thoughts of connections between spiritualism and Judaism that you think would be great to share with people today?
Well, I've got to put a plug in there for this place in the picture here.
Yes.
The Oaks, it's been renamed the Oaks B&B Hotel and Spiritual Center in Jamestown, New York. My wife and I purchased that building earlier this year, and it's a 10-room bed and breakfast that is geared around spiritualism and having a quiet, there's a meditation room, there's quiet times, and the local Jewish community spends time in our building as well,
mm-hmm.
so we've gotten involved with them, they don't have a problem with the spiritualism.
Right.
We're trying to create my form of spiritualism is non-denominational. So there may be some people who are on here or belong to a spiritualist church that is, because there are Christian-based spiritualist churches. So where they actually have the Bible up on the platform and open all the time. And that's okay. They're right to have. But people who maybe gone to that type and never been to another type need to understand that there are a lot that are very non-denominational, meaning that there is no religion background. And that's the type of facility that we try to run there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to encourage it to be that type of facility. And where we're doing, we have a meeting room where we have availability for workshops and retreats and seminars and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So. Got to put the plug in there.
Yes.
TheOaksBnB.com.
There you go. And so that's a community connection point that you're making with that. And it's a good one. And then in terms of some other connection points with spiritualism and Judaism, what I find, and of course, correct me if I'm wrong, I find there's that connection with the light, the connection with the source of all, and whereas the spiritualist might say infinite intelligence, it doesn't seem too far off the mark that Judaism, someone of the Jewish faith, would also see that as infinite intelligence, the source of all.
In Judaism, you don't actually say the proper name of God. There's actually, I believe, 12 different names for referencing God.
Mm-hmm.
The
you have to dance around it.
You dance around because you're not supposed to say it. When you write, an Orthodox Jew, if they write the word God, the G-O-D, they won't put the O, they'll put a dash in because you're not supposed to write the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
So where I have a problem with that is using something different but meaning what you, like, if you mean God, say God.
Right. Yes.
It's like, sorry, I'm going to take a little shot here. Christianity says, put no other God before me, but then Christianity has this hierarchy of these people that you're supposed to bow down to and honor before God. So, and to me, it's a little bit of an oxymoron in that you believe this, but then you have to do this. And that is why a rabbi